Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's February the 14th, and we are in Parshas Vayikra on page 552. We're about to start Paragimel chapter 3. We have dealt with the Karban Ola. That's the one that's totally burnt. We dealt with the Karban Mincha. That's the meal or flour offering. And now we move to the Karban Shlamim, the peace offering. The Shlamim is different than the Ola in that the Ola was completely burned. The Shlamim is going to have parts of it that will be eaten. In fact, the Shlamim has parts of it that are eaten by the Kohen, parts of it that are eaten by the person who is offering the Karban, and parts of it that get burned on the Mizbeach. And therefore, the Shlamim really has a portion that goes to each entity, to the Mizbeach, to the Kohanim, and to the one who offered the Karban.
Complete.
It's complete, which is why it is called a Shlamim. It is Shalem. It is complete in that all entities get a portion of the animal. It's also called a Shlamim because it brings Shalom to the world to offer a Karban like this. The Shlamim, unlike the Ola, can either be a male or female animal. The Ola had to be a male animal. This one can either be male or female. In addition, the Shlamim is considered Kadshim Kalim, which means it is of the lower status of Kadshim, of Karbanos, in that it can be eaten by non-Kohanim, as we see, the owner can eat some of it. It does not need to be eaten in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. It can be eaten even outside the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, as long as it is within the city of Yerushalayim. So it has a broader range of where it can be eaten. It has a broader range of who can eat it. In addition, as we'll see, not in this parsha, but when we discuss it later on, in Parshas Tzav, we will see that it also has more time to be eaten than other types of karbanos. A shlamim can be eaten the day it is offered, the evening after it is offered, and the next day as well. So up to 36 hours. If it's brought first thing in the morning, you have the entire day, that night, and the following day. Question?
Well, did they have these sacrifices with the Mishkan?
Yes.
Then it wasn't.
So in the Mishkan, the camp of the Levium counted as the city of Yerushalayim.
Okay.
Right. So it could be eaten throughout the entire camp of the Levium, but not where the Yisraelim were camped. Right. There will be times when a person is obligated to bring a Karban Shlamim, and a Shlamim can also be brought voluntarily, just because a person wants to bring it. The Karban Toda, which is not being discussed here, we'll discuss it later on in Parshas Tzav as well. The Karban Toda, the Thanksgiving offering, is a form of a Shlamim. It's a Shlamim with some added rules. The Karban Pesach, the Pesach offering, is a form of a Shlamim. It's a Shlamim with some additional rules. When we get to the Karban Toda, then we'll see how the Karban Toda differs from the Shlamim. But it is essentially a Shlamim with some additional rules.
What's the Shlamim?
The Shlamim is what we're talking about right here. The Karban Pesach, we really discussed it back in Parshas Bo, but it was so long ago. But when we have a chance, hopefully we'll discuss that as well and show the differences between a Karban Pesach and a regular Karban Shlamim. Now, we're going to read a lot tonight because the Shlamim has three paragraphs. One discussing a cow, one discussing a goat, and one discussing a sheep. Or a sheep and then a goat. So we're going to read all three paragraphs. They are very similar to each other, The Gemara discusses why all of this needs to be repeated for each type of animal. So we're going to read all three through. Now there are going to be some pieces here that are going to be difficult to translate, only because I can only speak for myself, but I presume it's true for all of you as well. We're not so familiar with the details of the anatomy of an animal. I'm not talking about you go to the store and buy a piece of beef. I'm talking about you dissect a cow and knowing what all the pieces are. So I think that most of us are not so proficient in that, and that's why it'll be a little bit difficult to translate all of the words. We'll use some of the things, some of the English here to help, but some of it we're just going to have to take at face value, and some of it we'll see if we can understand a little bit better. So the Torah says, Perigimel verse chapter 3, Vimzemach shlamim karbono, if his karbon is a shlamim karbon, a complete karbon, imina bakarhu makriv, if he's bringing it from cattle, im zachar im nekeva, whether it is male, whether it is female, tami miakrivenu lifnei Hashem, he shall bring it before Hashem as a complete animal, which means that without a blemish. It may be male or female, but it has to be without a blemish. V'samach yado arosh karbono, he shall lean his hand on the head of his karbon, ushkato, and he shall shecht it, pesach ohel moed, at the entrance of the tent of meeting, which means in front of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, depending on whether it's in the wilderness or in Yerushalayim. Vizarku b'nei Aaron ha-kohanim es adam, and the sons of Aaron, the kohanim, will throw the blood al ha-mizbeach, on the altar, saviv, all around. And as we've discussed before, this the throwing of the blood is shtayim shehin arba, which means there are two throwings of blood, but it has to go all around the altar. So recall, we discussed this with the Ola, that that he throws it at two opposite corners of the altar. He throws it at the southwest corner and the northeast corner, and the blood hits the corner of the altar, and therefore it splatters in two directions, getting on either wall of the Mizbech. So when he throws it at the southwest corner, the blood gets on the south wall and on the west wall. And when he throws it at the northeast corner, the blood gets on the north wall and the east wall. So it's two applications of blood, which are four, because it manages to get all around. V'kriv mizemach ha-shlamim yishel la-Hashem, he shall offer or burn from the shlamim sacrifice a burnt offering to Hashem. So part of it is going to be burned to Hashem. Now, what are the parts that are burned to Hashem? And here we get a little bit of a discussion of the parts of the animal. Es ha-chelev ha-mechaseh es ha-kerev, the fat of the animal that covers, now it calls it the innards. That's what it calls it over there in the English, the innards. The kerev is a part of the animal around the stomach area, and the fat that covers that area has to get burned. Ve'es kol ha-chelev asher al ha-kerev, and all of the fat that is upon the innards. Now that seems a little redundant. It says the fat that covers the innards, and all the fat that is on the innards. So the Gemara tells us that this means to include another part of the fat of the animal in that same area. And again, without having a picture of a cow in front of us to go through and look at the specific the fats of the animal, it's hard to pin this down. But there is another area near the first area that is also has to get burned. Ve'es shnei aklayos, and the two kidneys, ves hachelev asher aleihen, and the fat that is upon them, asher al aksolim, that is upon, it says here, the flanks, the sides of the animal, ves hayoseres al akaved, and it says here, the diaphragm with the liver, the yoseres is the diaphragm, the kaved is the liver, so not all the liver, but part of the liver, al akoyos isirena, with the kidneys they shall be removed. V'iktiru oso v'nei Aaron ha-mizbecha, and the children of Aaron will burn it on the mizbeach, on the altar, al ha'olah, on the olah, Asher al ha'itzim, asher al ha'esh, that is on the wood, that is on the fire. Yishei reach nichach la'Hashem, it is a fire offering and a pleasant aroma, a satisfying aroma to Hashem. Now it says that all these parts, it's primarily the fats, are burned on the altar, on the Ola. Now that's a funny thing to say, on the Ola. We're not discussing a carbon Ola over here. We're discussing a carbon Shlamim over here. So why does it say you burn it on the Ola? So the Gemara explains that what is the very first offering in the morning, the first carbon, the first sacrifice that is brought every single morning? Who knows?
Well, I looked at the footnote.
Okay, go ahead. Well, you can tell us what the footnote says.
The first offering of the day was the tamid.
The tamid. Okay.
The daily continuing elevation offering.
Okay, the daily offering. That's the tamid. And that's brought first thing in the morning. From here, as well as from some other places in the Torah, we learn that that carbon, the carbon tamid, the one that's brought every day, must be the first offering. It must be the first thing brought. And therefore, everything else is on top of that. Meaning it's that one's already been offered and brought and burned. Now, everything else is, so to speak, on top of that. It's that everything else comes after that. That carbon tamid, that sacrifice that's brought every day, is an ola. It's an animal that's completely burned, and all other sacrifices of the day need to follow the carbon ola. Now, the carbon tamid. Now, the carbon tamid really has two carbonos. There's two daily offerings every day. One is brought first thing in the morning, and the other one is brought... Okay, so it's the last thing in the afternoon, before sunset. The last thing that's brought is the carbon tamid of the afternoon, the mincha time. All carbonos have to be sandwiched between these two carbonos. The carbon tamid is the first carbon of the day, and it's the last carbon of the day. And all other carbonos go between the two carbonos tamid.
They were busy.
What's that?
They were busy.
They were busy, yeah. Yeah. Now we're going to have another paragraph, this time about sheep, and it's going to be almost identical to the one we just read. V'minatzon carbono, and if from the sheep, now tzon really means sheep or cattle. I'm sorry, sheep or goats. Lezemach shlamim lahashem, as a shlamim offering to Hashem, zachar o nekeva, male or female, tamim yakrivenu, it has to be brought whole, meaning without any blemish. Now we split up, and this paragraph will now be about sheep, and the next one will be about goats. So this opening line, this opening sentence was about sheep and goats, but from here on in we talk about sheep, and then we'll switch to goats in the next paragraph. Im kesef hu makrives karbano, if he is bringing a sheep as his karban, v'ikrivo solif ne Hashem, he shall bring it before Hashem. V'samach es yado arosh karbano, he shall lean his hand on the head of the sheep, of the karban, v'shachata solif ne oel moed, he shall slaughter it in front of the tent of meeting, v'zarku b'nei Aaron es damo al ha-mizbeach saviv, and the children of Aaron will throw its blood on the mizbeach all around. Same thing as before, two applications which are really four. V'ikriv mizemach ha-shlamim yishel ha-Hashem, he shall bring, which means he shall offer, burn, from the shlamim karban, a burnt offering to Hashem, chelbo ha'al yasimima, its fat, its complete tail. Now this was not mentioned before as something that was brought with the cow. Here it is a new item that is going to be burned, which is its tail. Now the way they translate it is its choicest part, the entire tail. Chelbo, its choicest part. Hal yasimima, its entire tail. Li'umas he'atse yisirena, which means he shall remove it above the kidneys. Meaning the tail, it's unclear where the tail starts. We know where the tail ends, but where does the tail start on the animal? If the tail is just an extension of the back of the animal. So where is where does the tail begin? When you say offering the tail, burning the tail, where does the tail begin? So it begins above the kidneys. You go to where the kidneys are in the animal, cut above that part, and that part to the end of the tail is the tail. So that should be removed and burned. And again, we have the fat that covers the innards. And all of the fat that's upon the innards. And the two kidneys. And the fat that is upon them. That is on the flanks. And the I forgot how they translate this.
Diaphragm,
thank you. Along with part of the liver. Ala klayos is sirena, in addition to the kidneys must be removed. Vikti roa koin amizbecha, the coin shall burn it on the altar. Lechem ishela Hashem, it is food of the fire for Hashem. So the primary addition we have with the sheep that we did not have with the cow is the fact that the tail is burned as well. One more paragraph before we discuss this, and that is about goats. Vim eiz karbano, if his karban is an eiz, is a goat. He shall bring it before Hashem. He shall lean his hand on its head. He shall slaughter it in front of the tent of meeting. And the children of Aaron will throw the blood on the altar all around. He shall bring from it his karban as a fire offering to Hashem. The fat that covers the innards, and all the fat that is upon the innards, and the two kidneys, and the fat that is upon them, that's on the flanks, and the diaphragm that is along with the part of the liver, in addition to the kidneys, he shall remove it. And the kohen will burn them on the mizbeach, lechem yisheh, it is food for the fire as a pleasant aroma. Kol chelev laHashem, all fats to Hashem, all the choice parts for Hashem. And we end off now with a general commandment. Chukas olam l'doros eichem. This is a law forever for all your generations. B'chol moshvos eichem, in all the places that you live. Kol chelev v'chol dam, all fats and all blood, lo sochelu, you shall not eat. Now that last line is really, or at least it appears to be, something which is not directly related to karbanos. That is a law when it comes to eating an animal, just as we know you can't eat the gid hanasha, you can't eat the sciatic nerve. We also know you can't eat certain fats and you can't eat the blood. And here there's a mention of the fat and the blood. So we'll get back to that in a few minutes. So the shlamim is, as we see, it's repeated a couple of times. We have three different animals essentially getting the same laws. And the shlamim, parts of it are burned. Here the Torah does not discuss, okay, so which parts are eaten by the kohen? Which parts are eaten by the person who offered the karban? How long do you have to eat it? None of that is being discussed over here. All that will be discussed later on in Sefer Vayikra. Following the pattern of the Ola and the Mincha, which we already discussed, right now we're only talking about that which gets burned on the Mizbeach. That's what's being discussed. We will eventually discuss what gets eaten and who eats it and how. Yeah.
So, I guess I could assume that birds are not involved in this and the meal's not involved in this.
Right, that's right. A shlamim is either a cow, a goat, or a sheep. Those are for a shlamim, for a peace offering. Correct. That's right. Yeah.
That's interesting. I noticed you said a cow, a goat, or a sheep. I was asking myself the question why here the sheep was mentioned before the goat.
Yeah, right. I meant a cow, sheep, or goat.
Is there a reason why?
That's a good question. I don't know why the Torah sometimes puts sheep before goats and goats before sheep. In this case, the sheep has an additional part that's burned more
tail
than the goat, the tail. Yeah. Right, right. Now, the tail of a sheep is thicker than the tail of a goat. There's more to it. And perhaps that's why it has to get burned. The
It's also more fatty.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah, it's a fattier piece than the goat. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You said with the cattle that the fire offering was a satisfying aroma to Hashem, but it doesn't say that about the goat and sheep.
It says a similar word. It says that it's, you're right, it says a little differently. It says that it's food for the fire, for Hashem. Right. Right. You're right. It doesn't say the same phrase. Well, it does at the end.
It says the food of the fire for satisfying aroma.
Yes, it does say satisfying aroma there also. Right. But it does say it a little differently. It's a good point. I don't know the answer to that nuance either. It's a good point. Yeah.
I think it was last week you talked about the person who couldn't afford to bring an animal. So can they make this kind of offering with the flour?
No. No. This is offered only with an animal. And you're right, it's an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
The Gemara learns from here, from the way the Torah talks about that these animals have to be slaughtered at the entrance of the Tent of Meeting, at the Beis HaMikdash or at the Mishkan, that there is an implied prohibition that one is not allowed to slaughter a non-carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. There is a prohibition in the Torah called Chulin Ba'azara, which means a non-carbon animal being slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash. That is a problem. Just as the carbonos can only be slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash, they cannot be slaughtered at your home and then brought to the Beis HaMikdash, they have to be slaughtered at the Beis HaMikdash. So too, your animals that are not carbonos may not be slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash. They must be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. The truth is, a non-carbon animal shouldn't be wandering around the Beis HaMikdash anyway. But certainly, to slaughter a non-carbon animal in the Beis HaMikdash would be a problem of chulin ba'azara, non-sanctified animals being offered in the Beis HaMikdash. That's a problem. Which leads to an interesting situation, whereas you know that frequently when we're not sure about what to do, so it's very easy to be machmir, to be stringent. If you're not sure, so be stringent. Until you find out what to do, just be stringent. So you're not sure if the food is kosher or not, you don't eat it. Okay, so we'll just be stringent. You're not sure if you could do this on Shabbos or not, so you don't do it. You're stringent. That's the easy way out, until you find out what to do. But sometimes you have situations where you are stuck either way, where if you're not sure, you can't not do it, and you can't do it. And you're stuck, and you have to find out what to do. So here we have one of those examples. If you have an animal, and you are unsure whether this animal is a carbon or is not a carbon, you can't do anything with the animal. You can't slaughter it in the Beis HaMikdash, because maybe it's not a carbon. And you can't slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash, because maybe it is a carbon. So in that case, you're stuck either way, and that's why the Gemara discusses what to do under those circumstances. So here you have a prohibition both ways, against slaughtering a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash, and against slaughtering a non-carbon inside the Beis HaMikdash. Either way, you can't do it.
I'm confused about what? Sorry. Why would somebody slaughter an animal that's not for the carbon? I mean,
you're right. It shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen, right?
Right, but what happens if you're not sure? You have two different cows, and you sanctified one, and you can't remember which one it was.
When did you sanctify the cow?
You can sanctify it at home.
Uh-huh.
You can say this animal is a carbon. This right. animal is a shlomim.
You brought two, and you forgot which one. Yeah.
Right.
But what would they bring two? When would you bring two?
No, you have two at home. You went out to your stable.
Oh.
And you sanctified one. You don't remember which one it was. So one of them is a carbon, one of them is not a carbon.
Oh.
I'm sure probably means something.
Go ahead.
Could you collectively make a sacrifice? Could you get your neighbor?
Yes. A shlamim could be brought together. Yeah, you could have a group, which would help for a person who couldn't afford it. It could be brought as a group.
It could be brought as a group.
Yeah. The Atlanta community could send a shlamim to to be brought. Yeah.
So in the case if you had, you don't remember which one it is, and you did sanctify one, could you give the other one?
You could. You could, but then you end up losing both cows.
Oh, you end up losing.
Expensive.
Very expensive. But
so
you could.
It's a statement that's made, I sanctify you and I'm going to take you.
Yeah. Yeah. One could do it one of two ways. One can say, this cow, I sanctify this cow as a shlamim. Or one can say, I obligate myself to bring a shlamim without specifying which cow it's going to
be.
And then later on, figure out which one it is. Yeah.
What happens to an animal that's been shechted and found treif?
In the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, so that carbon is no good if it's found to be treif, and therefore the person has not satisfied their obligation, and it depends on the nature of what they said. See, if they said, I sanctify this animal as a carbon, then if this animal turns out to be no good, okay, I didn't get my mitzvah, but I'm not obligated to do anything about it. Because I never obligated myself. I only said this animal will be a carbon. But if I said that I am obligated to bring a carbon, and then I bring a carbon, it turns out to be no good, then I have to bring another one.
What happens to the animal?
So the animal is removed from the Beis HaMikdash, and it is burned outside the Beis HaMikdash. Right. I mean, no one can eat it anyway. It's not kosher anyway if it turns out to be a treif. If you find a hole in the lung or something like that.
Yeah. All right. So if they had said, sanctify this one, and then they don't remember which one, and so now they're going to do both if they're rich. Is it all right to again say, I sanctify when you've already said, I sanctify this one, but you don't know
right.
which one?
So that's a good question. So what the Gemara says to do is the following. Okay, so I have two cows, and I sanctified one of them. I don't remember which one it was. It's now really stuck. So one of them is a carbon, the other one is not a carbon. So what we do is I find someone else who wants to offer a carbon shlamim. So they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And I go to them and I say, listen, help me out over here. I got one and I got another one. I'm not sure which one is which. So what he does is he says, okay, I sanctify for myself whichever one you didn't. We don't know which one it is.
Yeah,
which one you didn't,
right?
And he pays me the value of that cow because he's taking my cow. Then we both go to the Beis HaMikdash together with both cows, and the Kohen offers both, and he says, if this one is Pransky's, then this one should be for Pransky. And if this one is Conover's, it should be for Conover. And that way, you know, and he does that with the whole thing, and he makes that condition both ways. And that's the way to handle it. That doesn't work for all carbonos. That does work for a shlamim. Well, that does not work in every case, but in this case, it would work to handle it that way. But the reason, well, I shouldn't say the reason, but one of the reasons why you have to make it work out is because you can't slaughter a non-carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. So if you're going to bring it up there, they all have to be carbonos.
You have to be careful with that and careful with what you say.
You got to be careful what you say, right? And try to tag the animal after you say it. Right. Yeah. Now, the Torah gives a general statement over here at the end that all fats and all blood you shall not eat. The animal has certain fats that cannot be eaten, and it has certain fats that can be eaten. We're talking here about carbonos, but when an animal is slaughtered, a regular animal is slaughtered, not a carbon, certain parts of the animal can be eaten, and certain parts of the animal cannot be eaten. So we know already that, of course, as I mentioned before, the gid hanasha, the sciatic nerve, cannot be eaten. In the United States, the hindquarters are generally not eaten, even though the Torah doesn't say you can't eat the hindquarters. In theory, you could cut out the gid hanasha, the sciatic nerve, along with certain parts around it, which are also prohibited. But you could take all that out, and then the hindquarters would be permitted. But in the United States, they don't do that. They just sell the hindquarters to non-kosher meat establishments, and we do not eat the hindquarters in the United States. And in Israel, you can eat the hindquarters. There's ways of getting it. As far as I know. But besides the sciatic nerve, there are other parts that cannot be eaten. So we know the blood cannot be eaten. That we're aware of. But in addition to the blood not being eaten, there are certain fats that cannot be eaten. Those fats, which are offered on the Mizbeach, are prohibited to be eaten by in an irregular non-carbon animal. Those, there are other fats of the animal which can be eaten. In the Gemara, there is a distinction made in the language that we use to refer to the permitted fats and to the prohibited fats. This is not an inherent definition. This is just the way it's a, for convenience, so that, that you know what we're talking about. The Gemara uses two different words for fat. The word chelev, which is the word used over here, means the choicest or the fattest. So that word has come to mean the prohibited fats, because that's the word used in the Torah. The word shuman, which also means fat, shamein means fat, the word shuman can also mean the fats of the animal, that is used in the Gemara parlance to mean permitted fats of the animal. So the Gemara will speak about shuman, permitted fat, and chalev, non-permitted fat. As in, a person has a piece of fat in front of them, and they don't know whether it is shuman or whether it is chalev. That's another way of saying they don't know whether it is permitted fat or non-permitted fat. And he ate it. What should he do? Does he offer a sacrifice for sinning? But he's not sure if he sinned because he doesn't know if it was permitted or not permitted. That's the way the Gemara will deal with it. It will use the different language of shuman and chelev. Chelev we see here over and over again is the part that gets burned on the Mizbeach. Therefore, it is used as the prohibited fats. Shuman is the term used for the permitted fats. Just so you know the language.
You said that if a person doesn't know, they shouldn't do it.
Correct.
So
what if he did?
What if he did what?
Ate it anyway. He didn't know and he did.
He didn't know, but he ate it anyway.
Right. It can happen without fat. A person could have a piece of steak in front of them. They don't know if it's from a slaughtered cow or from a cow that wasn't slaughtered. A cow that wasn't slaughtered is a nevela. That's not kosher. It's from a cow, but it's not kosher. So, if a person eats it unsure of whether it is kosher or not kosher, so we're going to see later on what to do about that. The general prohibition against eating the fat and the blood is mentioned here. Now, it's going to be repeated later in the Torah. We'll see it repeated, and actually more detail will be offered later in the Torah. But it is important to note why it is mentioned here. The fact that it is mentioned here seems to tie together the prohibition of eating these fats and the prohibition of eating blood with the karban, even though the prohibition is on all animals, nothing to do with the karban. Today, where the animals are not karbanos, you still can't eat those fats and you still can't eat the blood. So what is the connection between the prohibition of the fat and the blood and the karbanos? So it appears like the Torah is saying the following. The blood goes on the Mizbeach. The fat goes on the Mizbeach. You are not to eat those things. Those are reserved for the Mizbeach. And even an animal which is not a karban, nevertheless, these parts of the animal are reserved for the Mizbeach. And therefore, you may not eat them. We're going to see later that the Torah is going to tell us the blood cannot be eaten because the blood is the life of the animal. Ki nefesh kol basar badam hu. That the soul of all creatures is in the blood. And therefore, you may not eat the blood. So that'll be another approach to the reason for not eating blood. But here, just from the fact that Torah puts the prohibition right next to the discussion of karbanos, sounds like the Torah is trying to tell us these items, the blood and the fat, are reserved for the Mizbeach, and therefore we may not eat them, even when it's not a karban. That's what it appears like the Torah is doing. Now that may be directly related to the fact that the blood, for example, is the life of the animal, and the life of the animal gets put on the Mizbeach, and it's not for us to eat. That may all be related together. But here, the context or the juxtaposition seems to indicate that there is a relationship between the fact that the blood and the fats go on the Mizbeach and that we are not allowed to eat them. Blood has to be removed before the meat can be eaten. The removal of blood from the meat is a process. It is a process that is discussed extensively in Shulchan Aruch, and it has to be done properly. Now, when the animal is slaughtered, I apologize if anybody gets queasy with these discussions. I don't mean to, you can stop me. I'm not trying to make anybody uncomfortable. But when the animal is slaughtered, so I mentioned to you before, I believe, that the process of slaughtering is to cut the esophagus and the trachea. There are two arteries in the neck, the carotid arteries. And when they are severed, then the blood comes out very quickly. If they were not severed, then the blood remains in the animal. It doesn't come out very well. In normative practice, when an animal is slaughtered, the carotid arteries are deliberately cut, because that way the blood comes out very quickly, which makes it easier to kosher the meat later. In terms of the Beis HaMikdash, where they had to catch the blood and throw the blood on the altar, on the Mizbeach, it was a lot easier to do that if you cut the carotid artery, because then the blood came out very quickly and also in a manner that was easy to catch, and then the blood could be caught and put on the Mizbeach. Without cutting the carotid arteries, it makes it very difficult to get the blood and then put it on the Mizbeach. So they did deliberately cut the carotid arteries along with the trachea and the esophagus. If anybody has gone or does in the future go to visit a slaughterhouse, you'll see that that's what they do, and the blood does come out very quickly. Since the blood comes out very quickly with the cutting of the carotid arteries, then the blood that remains inside the animal can be removed in two different methods. What are the two methods to remove the blood from the animal?
Salting
and?
Washing.
Not washing.
Soaking.
Not soaking.
Cooking.
Roasting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Roasting over an open fire can also remove the blood from the animal. The process of salting and the process of roasting are somewhat involved. They can be done by a regular person. You don't have to be employed by a slaughterhouse to be able to roast or salt an animal properly. However, most people, but certainly I'm referring to particularly most Torah observant Jews, have never done those things before, because we buy it from the store already having been kashered. But it can be done.
In Europe, they do.
Okay, in Europe, you do it at home.
Submit three times.
Yeah. What's that?
The salt and washing.
The salting, the washing, yes. That has to be done properly with the washing and the salting, and with the right type of basin, the right type of surface to salt it on, to be done properly. And if it's roasted, same thing, it has to be done in a proper manner.
What else besides liver has to be roasted?
What else besides?
Liver.
It doesn't have to be the liver. We can't get the salt out. Excuse me. We can't get the blood out by salting. Therefore, the only method is through roasting. The rest of the meat can either be salted or roasted. But as was just mentioned, the heart as well would need to be roasted.
Right. Doesn't have to go into the ground, the blood?
Does the blood? It doesn't need to.
I mean, after the animal slaughtered.
So we'll learn later on that there's a mitzvah called kisui hadam, covering the blood. That mitzvah did not take place in the Beis HaMikdash, but if someone slaughters an animal outside the Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah to cover the blood. That mitzvah does not apply to a behema. To a behema means a domesticated animal. It does not apply to a sheep, a goat, or a cow. It only applies to birds, chickens, and to kosher wild animals like deer. But it does not apply to sheep, goat, or cows.
Okay.
The mitzvah of covering the blood. when there is a mitzvah to cover the blood, the simplest way to do that is to let the blood onto the ground and then to cover it with more dirt. That is the simplest way to do that mitzvah. Okay, now, what's interesting to note is that blood in an animal is only prohibited when it has come out of the animal, which means blood inside the meat is in theory permissible. So you slaughter an animal, and then after slaughtering it, you cut it up into pieces. The pieces that you cut will have blood on their surface. You wash off that blood. Now, if someone wanted to eat raw meat, I'm not suggesting you do this, but if someone wanted to eat raw meat, could they bite into the meat, even though it has not yet been kashered, meaning it has not yet had the salt removed? The answer is yes. One could, in theory, do that, because the blood that is still inside the meat is okay to eat. It's only prohibited once it comes out of the meat. The reason why we have to, I use the word kasher loosely, because kasher implies that it wasn't kosher until now. But the truth is, it was kosher. You could bite into it raw. But the reason why we need to get the blood out is because if you take meat that has not had the blood removed and you boil it, you cook it with liquid, what will happen is the liquid will draw the blood out of the meat, and then the blood will be reabsorbed by the meat. That is prohibited. Once the blood comes out, even if it gets reabsorbed, it cannot be eaten. That is not kosher. So if you want to do anything with the meat other than roast it, it needs to be preceded by salting, not because the meat isn't kosher as is, but because the process of preparing the meat will make it not kosher. Roasting doesn't need to have a formal salting process before, although they do add some salt before they roast it. But it doesn't need to have the same formal salting process, because there, when you have it being roasted over an open fire, the blood will be drawn to the fire, will drip down to the fire. It will not be reabsorbed into the meat. And that's why there is not a salting process that's necessary before roasting. It simply pulls the blood out, and that blood drips away, and it doesn't get into the meat. Any blood remaining in the meat after roasting is fine, because it never came out. As long as it never came out, that blood is permissible. But boiling is a problem, because boiling will pull the blood out and put the blood back in. And that's why the salting has to be done prior, in order to make sure that there is no blood that's going to come out in the boiling process.
It makes the meat very tough.
What does?
When you boil beef.
Okay. Yeah, but even not boiling in a deep pot of water, but even if you just roast it in a pan, it will then, the same process will happen, because the blood will get into the pan and then it'll go right back into the meat. Right. Only over an open fire, the blood drips away and does not go back into the meat. So over a spit, that would be acceptable.
Right.
Right.
So our ovens that we have today, since they're not over an open fire, we can't really technically roast.
Right. I mean, we could do, in theory, you could if you didn't put the meat in a pan. It would make a big mess in your oven. But if you just let it drip onto the, it would make a big mess. But in theory, you could do it.
So I could do liver on the barbecue?
Well, you could.
I haven't cooked liver since we started keeping kosher.
You could. The only thing is that the barbecue will become not kosher. The grill. So you have
the blood would be on it.
Yeah, and it will get absorbed into the. But it can be done. My mother used to do it, and she used to do it over. She didn't do it over a gas grill. She did it over one of these things that you buy. She designated it only for liver, and she used to do it over the.
The fact is, you could get a pan and those metal risers. The meat off the bottom, and you could roast it.
You could
liver
do it.
Liver's not so good for us anyway.
What's that?
Liver is not so good for us anyway.
But it's really, for
he has gout. It's not good for him.
But it's really delicious.
It is.
Yeah, that's
not
the point.
It's really good. But what am I, chopped liver?
That's different altogether.
You see, you know, the grill is then not kosher once you use it. But if you like turn it over and the fire burns it off.
Right, right. So there is a way of doing it. There is a way of doing it. It's just that you have to make sure you know what you're doing before you do it. But it can be done. As I said, today, because we don't normally do it, it seems like something which is so hard to do. It can be done. And for centuries, women did it at home. It was done. It's just a question of knowing how to do it before you do it. So ask first, do it later. We don't have the time now to go through all the details of how to do it. And also, I need to brush up a little bit. However, the Kol happens to be learning this subject right now. Not the entire Kol, but the four new younger rabbis and myself.
That's fabulous what you do with them.
Okay, so that's what we're learning right now, and that is so. In a short time, we should all be brushed up on the subject and be able to.
Blood sausage is out.
What's that?
Blood sausage is out.
Blood sausage, yeah, that's an issue. Yeah, yeah, but raw would be okay.
I watch the Food Channel.
Yeah.
And they make blood, I can't see how anybody would eat it, but. And not because I keep them kosher, it's just that I can't see anybody eating blood sausage.
Now, occasionally, you will cut into a kosher, meaning one that's already been salted. You bought from the store. A kosher piece of chicken, and you'll find red inside. Sometimes you'll find that. It'll be like a bright red inside the chicken. Mm-hmm. And it's already been salted. So it gets a person kind of nervous. Like, is that blood? Like, what is that? So that sometimes happens, that there can be some red left inside of the chicken. Particularly if you like eating your chicken rare. Rare. Right? Yeah. If you like eating it rare, so frequently there'll be like red, bright red inside. That is not blood. Meaning that it's not halakhically considered blood. It is, sometimes you'll have that residue in there, but it is kosher. It is not a problem. Our chickens have all been salted before you buy them.
Well, sometimes I remember, seeing, you make a chicken, and you rinse off where it's red, and assume it's okay. And then when you cook it, it's still red. There are still parts like that by the drumstick, by the bone. It's still disgusting.
Yeah. Well, you it's not disgusting to everybody. To you, right? But again, that is not a problem. It is kosher, even though there is a red color, because it's been salted. And that,
so what is that from, though?
The Gemara makes a distinction between, again, it's so hard to, because I don't actually salt things. It's hard for me. But the Gemara makes a distinction between the actual blood and this reddish color, which appears like it's blood, but it does not halakhically have the law of blood. Now, there can be situations where even when you buy kosher, I'll say chicken because that's the one I'm familiar with. Meat probably is the same thing, I just don't know how it would look. But when you buy kosher chicken, and it could still, you could get it and realize that in fact there still is a problem. That would be not with the situation where you cut open the chicken, like you're eating the chicken at your table and you find red inside. That's okay. But sometimes even before you cook the chicken, you'll notice a deep a black and blue mark, like a bruise on the chicken, and that bruise, there's clearly a clot of blood where that bruise is. That should be removed. That should be removed before cooking. That part that has been bruised, and I'm talking about like there's a deep purple color, and you can tell it.
It's on the skin though. It's not usually on the.
Yeah, usually it's just on the surface. Usually it's on the surface, but that should be removed. The most people would remove it anyway, because most people, they look at it and they don't want to eat it, understandably. But it's a bruise that occurred, and that should be removed.
Well, those hairs and feathers are okay.
Okay, that's not going there.
My great grandfather was a shofet.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, before I was interested, my grandmother showed me. She kashered a chicken. She had the wooden boards, the salt, etc. And she said, "You take out the kidneys. You scoop out the kidneys." And when you buy chicken, it looks like the kidneys are there. Unless I'm reading it wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they remove the kidneys or not from the chickens.
Didn't they used to put all that in the little plastic bag?
So in the little plastic bag, they used to keep the livers.
The livers.
Yeah, yeah. That was a real problem because those livers.
And the feet.
Three cooks
and
all.
I cooked it. Whoa, does that smell?
Right. The problem is that those livers have not been kashered.
Right.
Neither has the plastic bag.
And some people don't even know it's inside.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Especially rookie housewives.
Right. So that used to be a problem. But now they don't do that anymore. At least I don't think they do it anymore.
No, they don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the soup? My grandmother used to make the soup with the soup also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with it. No, there's nothing wrong with it.
You can't even find them any.
Right.
I wouldn't look for it, but you can't find them.
I would not.
Listen, when you grew your own chickens and you're in the shtetl and people that had no money. But they had no money. They had no, so you ate everything you could get out of this thing. This was your dinner. You ate, maybe dinner for 2 days. You ate whatever you could out of the, this is what you had to eat.
Chicken feet.
All right, whatever you could. And you made it last. So if you can make it into a soup or a stew, you made it last longer. Whatever you can make, you can get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to introduce you to a concept that I don't understand, but I want to introduce it to you anyway because the Torah says it almost explicitly. And as much as I don't understand it, but you should know about it, the Gemara says it all the time. And the Gemara says it as a matter of something which is obvious. So let's just be exposed to this concept. Let me just find it over here. If you look back at Pasuk Tes, verse 9, this is when discussing the sheep and discussing the removal of the tail. So it says that the tail should be removed, and it should be removed above the kidneys. Le'umas he'atzeh yesirena. Above the kidneys, it should be removed. Now, we had the word kidneys in these paragraphs, but we had a different word for kidneys. If you skip down two lines, you'll see the word kilayos. Kilayos in Pasuk Yud in verse 10, you see the word ve'eshte ha-kilayos. The two kidneys. Kilayos is the word for kidneys. Here in Pasuk Tes in verse 9, the word kidneys is referred to as the atzeh, which is a different word for kidney. So it's curious that the Torah has two different words for kidney. Kilayos is kidneys. It would be in English, it's kilayos. That's the typical way it's spelled. And then how are we going to do this?
O-T-Z?
Should we do it that way? Okay. Okay. So it probably is really etzeh if you take out the hay, because all right, whatever it is. So the Gemara tells us that the reason why this word, atzeh, means kidneys is because the word atzeh is the same word as eitza. What is an eitza? I'm seeking an eitza. You know what eitza is? Eitza is, huh?
Advice.
No? Advice, correct. So the Gemara tells us that every part of the body does different things. We say it every day in Shema, that the heart desires, right? Don't stray after your heart and after your eyes. Because the heart desires. The brain thinks. The Gemara tells us the kidneys advise. Makom shehaklayos yo'atzos. The kidneys advise. I have no idea what that means. But I'm telling you, the Gemara says it all over. That advice, whatever, I don't know what advice means in this context either.
Right.
But advice comes from the kidneys. Now, again, I don't know what it means. I don't even know what, as I said.
Two kidneys.
Yeah, there are two kidneys. That's right.
You know how eights and eights are connected?
Yeah, how they are connected?
Because both are something that you can lean on.
Uh-huh. Advice and a tree. The word eights is
right,
a tree. Okay, good. Good. So I'm telling you this only so that you're aware of the concept, but I can't explain it to you because I don't understand it myself. I do know that the Gemara says it all over the place that the kidneys are, they advise. And again, I don't even know what the Gemara means with the word advice. Yeah.
I obviously don't know, but advice usually comes in the form of a filtration. You're presented with an array of information.
Okay.
You choose.
Okay.
The function of the kidney is to
filter. Okay, good. So you're pointing out it's a similar idea. So if I come to you for advice, I'm asking you to filter. I have all this information. I have many choices. I don't know what to do. And I'm asking you to filter it for me as a third party who can perhaps have a different perspective than I can.
So why isn't it called that all the time?
Okay, all right, that's, you know, but, so you're pointing out that it's that's what a kidney does, and therefore it's a similar function. Good. So that's a nice connection. And that is a beautiful connection. But that's hard to explain that advice comes from the kidneys. Like,
yeah,
it says that the kidneys advise.
Mm-hmm.
I understand advice is similar to kidneys,
mm-hmm.
but how do kidneys advise? I don't know.
How does the mind think?
Right. And I don't
it is just as difficult to understand as a concept as the blood is the soul.
Okay, but the blood is the soul. Okay,
Okay,
but that is the concept.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.